Okay.
The ladies have a set itinerary.
Still. Okay, we're on Sugya 5. Oh, I didn't hook up the thing yet. Okay. We're on Sugya number 5. We're going back to that case, still on that case. I'm just reviewing for a few minutes. Where the dog ate the cake that was connected to the coal and then brought it near a stack of grain. And the Mishnah says that the owner of the dog is chayev for the cake to pay full, and the stack of grain, he pays, then it's a whole machlokas exactly, according to which opinion, how much you pay for, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, but you pay for the stack, for whatever you pay for the stack. Fine. So the question that we're discussing, the last issue is, where did the dog eat the cake? Where did he eat the cake? Now, and the question is, whose stack was it by? Whose property by the stack? The second issue is going to be, is an animal's mouth like the victim's yard or like the damager's yard? So that's point one. Where did the dog eat the cake? Suggestion was near a stack of grain that did not belong to the owner of the cake. We start with that. The owner of the cake was one person. The owner of the stack of grain was another person. He went and took it to another person's field. We can't say that. Rejection. One is liable only in the field of another, meaning the victim. And here, to be chayav for the cake, it's not the victim's premises. So we can add, and the area near the stack is not the owner of the cakes.
I'm not talking about the owner of the fire now, the cake.
Yeah.
The fire, that's another issue.
Okay. So you have to try another answer. It ate near a stack of grain belonging to the owner of the cake. Has to be the owner of the cake. So now that is the victim's premises where you're eating the cake. Correct? You're eating the cake. So it comes out that the owner of the stack owned a cake, and he went and to a friend who was barbecuing, and he says, "Can I put my cake on your barbecue?" And the animal took the cake from the barbecue person's house and went all the way
his mouth and took it over
to the other guy's who owns the stack and ate his cake there, and now he's eating it in the premises of the victim. Okay? And that's going to be the final answer. That's going to be the final answer. Okay?
Well, once we establish that the cake owner and the stack owner are the same, that makes it clearer.
Right. Now when we come back to our Mishnah, we come back all the way to our Mishnah. The second case, a dog took a cake, took a pile of grain and ate the cake and burned the grain. So Sugya number 4 says the owner of the fire guarded his fire, okay, but the dog dug through the ground. The law is he, who's he? Sugya 4 says the owner of the dog pays full damage for the cake and half damage for the grain. Principle, eating the cake is a case of shame. We're going to skip that next part. The last part, Sugya number 4 will explain the reason that the owner of the dog pays because it's normal for the dog. Okay, so now we have to add something in here. Based on what we just learned, right? We have to say that where did he eat the cake? So we have to go back to condition 2. A dog took a cake to a pile of grain and ate the cake. Okay. So we have to say, let's add to a pile of grain. Was this Sugya 5? Sugya number 5. Owner of the cake
initially
put his cake on someone else's
fire.
And the dog, takes it from the fire to the owner. To the stack,
which is the same owner as the cake.
That is owned.
Is the same owner as the cake. As the owner of the cake. Okay, that's fine. Elsa's is misspelled now.
Okay, that's good.
That's good.
So you see how much, when you're learning a Mishnah, how much is packed into that Mishnah? You gotta pack so much into that Mishnah, or else you really don't understand what's going on. And the Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokish, etc., etc. Alright, so that's all what's over there. So that's why it all relates to the Mishnah. So now, the Gemara wants to make an inference now. And again, I'm not sure why the Gemara of all places in the Shas is looking at this case. We could have picked it in other cases. But this shows that an animal's mouth is like the victim's yard. Okay? And not like the animal's yard. Why? Because if it were like the damager's yard, then the dog's owner could say, "What is your cake doing in my animal's mouth?" And therefore he wouldn't have to pay. Right? Now Tosfos has a whole thing. Tosfos says if an animal took food from the victim's reshus means
out
property. Surely it is liable. That's for sure. In other words, if an animal just walks into somebody's property, we don't say what's he doing in my thing, but we ask only about a case where it did not take from there. What was going on? He didn't take the cake from
the owner of the...
From there, he took it somewhere else, right? He moved it to another place, as we see in the following...
He took it there, but he moved it somewhere else. That's
right. So, right, but it was in a different place to begin with. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, we see that at the end of the day, the animal ate it in its mouth, but he ate it in the victim's property. But still we say he pays. So we see it must be the animal's mouth is not considered the animal's property, the victim's property. Now the truth of the matter is this is correct, true, and a proof. We've proved it. Okay? But we say, so this answers the shiloh that's been asked all around in point six. Is an animal's mouth like the victim's yard or like the damager's yard? That's the general question that was out there that we're now going to go through. But you have to understand, the Gemara right away, and who made that inference? Who was the rabbi? What was his name? We'll see. But this inference is the way we answer the question. We will go through a number of proofs and reject many of them. But here is the proof that we need right here in this Mishnah, from this Mishnah. The fact that the dog pays for the cake, and we don't say, what are you doing? It's in the dog's property. And we make him pay. So therefore, we already have the proof. But this was an ongoing shaila until we came to this Mishnah with this proof. Okay, you follow? Follow what we're saying over here. So now, for the next number of lines, going from the bottom of 22b to the top, or 23a to the top of 23b, right? We should add 23a to B. Okay? We're going to go through that. Shiloh is an animal's mouth like the victim's yard or like the damager's yard. Okay? So that's the Shiloh. So we're going to pick it up at this point. We just did that last part with this question of understanding. Going back to the Gemara, and I think I got to go back. I prepared this, so I got to go back over here. One second. Going to be at the top of 23b. Top one. All Okay, so this is the shaila. Is the cow's mouth, when he eats something, is the mouth considered the cow's property and the damager's property? Or is the mouth considered, if he's in somebody else's property, the mouth is considered somebody else's property? Difference being, if he's in somebody else's property, you have to pay. But if it's not somebody else's property, you don't have to pay. So now the Gemara asks the following question. Wait a minute. Kachatzar Hamazik Dummy, if you're going to say that the mouth is like the mazik's, the damager's property. Oh, he's just finishing up the question. Hold it. Lay, you could say, my bay roof to bapuma de kabe. What's your cake doing in my mouth? Right? That was the end of the Mishnah's proof. The end of the Mishnah's proof. I'm just backing up. Dibalo, because we have the following shaila. Pi para kechatzar nisik dami, kechatzar mazik dami. Is the mouth of a cow like the property of the damagee, or is it like the property of the damager? Okay? Now we're coming to the point I want to start off. Now, the question is, wait a minute. You're going to tell me the mouth of an animal is like the property of the damager, you don't pay. The Amar Kechotzer Amazik tell me, if you're going to tell me it's like the property of the damager, then can you please kindly tell me, Shein dechayiv rachmona hekav yisrach, like, how will you ever be chayiv for shame? Torah says you pay when an animal eats in somebody else's property, but he's always eating with his mouth. How will he ever be chayiv? Right? So therefore, it would seem you have to always say it's the damagee's property. How else could you learn anything else? It has to be the damagee's property. So Amar Rav Mori Breder Rav Kahana. Rav Mori Breder Kahana is going to give one of two answers. First answer is, no, there are other toldos of shame that we are aware of. For example, Kagon Shenischachacha Bekosel Anosa. Let's say it rubbed herself against the wall for her gratification, then broke the wall. So that would be a case of shame, because shame is really doing something for its pleasure. So there's the pleasure that it's broken the wall, and there it's not in its mouth. No. It's not in its mouth. Or another case would be Vitanfa Beres Lanasa. It's soiled fruits. Now this different shot is what it is. By rolling herself on top of them for her own gratification. Either she just rolled on them, or remember we learned the other shot is she defecated on them. It's one of the two. So therefore, that's a case where the animal is not, it's not in his mouth. So it's a non-eating case of shame that's outside of the mouth of the animal. That's when you're chayiv. And that's where we really left off last time. So that's, if you're going to say that the mouth of the animal is like the animal's domain, of the owner of the damager's domain, you'll only be chayiv by shame when the animal is causing damage outside of its mouth for its own pleasure by either rubbing against the wall or wrecking up the fruits by rubbing on them or defecating on them. But there is a little bit of a problem. If you will recall, way back on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, way back in October, I'm sure we all have a vivid recollection of that, when we were trying to find what's the source of shame? What's the source? I know the Torah says you pay for shame. And we brought the pasuk. It says, "Ubi'er b'stei acher." It consumes in another field. So how do you know bi'er? How do you know the word bi'er means to consume? It's an unusual word, bi'er. How do you know it means to consume? So if you recall back, way back, first Mishnah. Sugya 3, what a coincidence, it just happens to be to the place. Okay, the issue is, what is the proof that Shane and Regal are avos? Where do you know they're from the Torah? And we brought the famous Bryce in point number 2. It says, whether he shall send Vishilach, his livestock, Espeiro, and it will consume Uvier, Bistech, in another person's field. That was the pasuk. We said Vishilach refers to regal, trampling, as we find in a verse by Yeshaya. It says, Meshalche, the foot of the ox and the donkey. We see from the puzzle the word Vishilach is referring to regal. Here's the point we need now. Uvier, it says Uvier refers to shame, as we find where in Malachim? As the tooth consumes. Alright? Ya'aver until its end. The pasuk says, will destroy Esav Ubir until it is consumed. So we're using the word Yevaer is similar to the word Ubir. Ubir, that word Ubir is the source of Shein in the Torah. The only way I know that when an animal eats something, you pay is on the word Ubir. Ubir. And what, how do we know it means to consume? Because we brought a pasuk of Malachim. They use the word yivaer, same root, and it says until its end.
Yeah.
Until its end. What does it mean, until its end?
Consumes completely.
Consumes completely.
That's it.
So now what do you see? You see when the Torah says the same word, uvir, it means it consumes it completely. Now how do you consume something completely? By eating it or by smashing it down, a wall down?
Eating.
When you smash the wall, you didn't consume it completely. When you eat something, it's vanished. You go to an apple, no sight of it anymore. If he rubs against the wall, you see the wall's broken. It's still there. It's not totally consumed. You roll on some fruits and mess them up. They're not totally consumed. So, you know, you can't, in other words, you can't go against the simple meaning of the Av Malacha, the Av Nezek, that primary damager of shame. The root of it is from the word Ubir. And Ubir means total consumption. Now you're gonna tell me another time you're ever Chayav? Is when it knocks a wall down? You don't even have one example of total consumption? That won't make any sense. Okay, so that is why you have to keep notes. Okay. Keep cross-referencing here.
Yeah.
See, this is the... Look over here. 1 second, where is it? Question of Marzutra. This is question of Marzutra. One is liable only for, like the galal tooth will totally consume. See Daf 3a, Sugya number 4, point number 2. Right? We see... clearly that shame must also or must primarily mean where the damage is totally consumed, which apparently can only happen by eating. Okay, see the question? So, we're going to have two answers. Someone says, no, we can totally destroy it without being in its mouth still. Right? Well, I jumped the gun. I didn't say I didn't do the question yet. Let me go back. Maski Lorara Sutra. Marasutra asks the question I just asked. Vahoba Inu, you need as an acquirement, as the Torah says, Kashir Yivaer Hagolol Atumo. You need as a proof in that pasuk, as the tooth destroys until its completion. Veleka, and that's lacking in Rav Mori's case. We're just knocking down a wall. Remember, I'm just reviewing what I said inside. This is the verse cited in 3a to prove that Ubir Bisteacher refers to the animals eating. Now, since that verse in Kings speaks of complete destruction, where nothing is left of the damaged item, as it says, until its completion, the indication is that the verse regarding Shane in Exodus also speaks of a case in which the damaged item is consumed completely. Now, granted that the animal's causing damage through rubbing herself against the wall or rolling her fruits is a case of Shane, but it is one in which the damaged item is not consumed entirely. Thus, Rav Mori's case cannot be the case of Ubir, can't be the only case. We have to have other cases. We have to have something that fits where it's totally destroyed. So what's going on? So we're going to give two answers. Ravina says, I'll tell you what it does. It's possible to totally destroy something by rubbing. He was rubbing against a wall where it had an image on the wall. It was a mural. And what does he do? He rubs against the mural till he wipes out the picture. So that's a total destruction of the picture, even though it's totally gone.
Yeah.
The damage that the image in the wall has been completely destroyed by the animal's rubbing, and it is a case of until its completion.
Yeah.
Rav gives a different example. Ravashi Omar, the pase psuye, it rubbed against the fruit so much that it's totally in the mud, that it's totally got meshed into the mud. Let's say you have a bunch of fruits on the mud, and it was rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling, so it rolled that fruit until you don't see anything like fruit, it's just a bigger pile of mud. Okay, so now we're up to the point where we now have clarified the Shaila, and we're now going to go through different cases of different Mishnayos to try to prove who's correct. Again, we've got the machlokas. If the animal is eating it, is his mouth considered his property or the damagee's property? We ask, wait a minute, if it's his property, how you ever chay for shame? Because then you're never in the other guy's property.
Yeah.
The answer is, he rubbed against the wall or he rolled on the stuff or it's on his mouth. But that's not a classic case of the pasuk saying total consumption. So you have to say total consumption, whereas he rubbed out a mural or totally wiped out the thing. So now we're going to try to bring proofs to this, who's right. Now again, our Mishnah already proved it.
Yeah.
Our Mishnah already proved it, because we said whose property has to be on. The cake has to be eaten where? In the owner of the stack's field. That's the only way to be chayav. If that's the only way to be chayav, we already proved it. And we have. But now, in spite of the fact we already proved it, the Gemara wants to go through a number of Mishnayos to see where, you know, the question was relevant, even though we won't come up with any proofs from there. So really, in effect, as they say, you know, it's not good to let the cat out of the bag, but we will anyway. So although we're going to go through a number of points in the Gemara, but the resolutions, we already have them. The dog ate the cake near a stack of grain belonging to the owner of the cake. An animal's mouth is considered like the victim's yard. We'll see, as I will elaborate later, both in regards to damages and murder. Okay, we will see that extra little point there. Okay, so we've already kind of resolved it, although we're going to go through all the steps of the Gemara. So now we're going to learn Torah for the sake of learning Torah, not because of the mystery aspect of how's it going to conclude. Okay, so now let's go to a Mishnah. Toshima. Come in here. This is what a Mishnah says. Let's say a person, shisabos akelav. A person comes along and incites a dog against another person. You stranger, it's not your dog. It's not your dog. You just go over, you see a dog over here, you see a little old lady over here, and you want to make trouble. So you go to the dog. Barrr, go, get her, get her, get her. He incites the dog to go after the poor old lady. And he bites her and hurts her or whatever. Right? Okay? Or shisabos anachash, or you incite a snake against somebody, and it creates all kinds of damages.
Your snake or somebody else?
Somebody else's snake, not mine. Now, look at the notes. You see, what follows are the resolutions presented by the Gemara in its original treatment of this inquiry. Above, however, the Gemara has already presented Rav Mori's conclusive resolution on the basis of our Mishnah. Right? See, right over here, those are telling you. We already finished up the story. Right? But we're going to just go over. There was this whole topical discussion, so we're going to go through the topical discussion. Now I got Rav Mori's name, so let me throw in Rav Mori over here. Let's go back and just throw in inference of Rav Mori. So we'll give credit to Rav Mori over here. Okay, so here's the case. The case is this guy incites someone else's dog or someone else's snake, and it damages. So what does the Mishnah say? Potter, you don't got to pay. So now the question is...
That's the owner of the dog.
I don't know. Gomorrah's going to ask. Well, let's try to understand the Mishnah. Man Potter, who's the one that's liable? Now the word potur, now let's think for a minute. There's two possibilities, or maybe three possibilities, right? You've got a dog or a snake that belongs to A. You've got another guy, B, who's a rotten stinker, who incites the dog or the snake to bite this little old lady. What do we say? If the rotten stinker incites the thing, the law is potur. Now you gotta understand, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And now, there's a lot of meanings here. We could say potter means the owner of the snake, the owner of the dog is potter.
Because
you could say, well, he's just sitting there. What does that do with me? I didn't incite him. Or you could say, maybe that the insider is potter. Now, could we say that both of them are potter?
Well, damage was done.
Could we say both of these guys are potter?
No, we can't.
Can't, not at all? Not possible. Well, what if we did?
Then
the wording of the Mishnah would not tend to do that, because if both of them were potter, we wouldn't say the word potter. What would we say? Piturim. In the plural.
Plural.
That they're both potter. Potter means one guy's potter. So right now, the Gemara thinks that that's the way we have to interpret it, that one guy is potter and one guy is chayev. So now, that's the way we're thinking right now. So one guy is potter, one guy is chayev. So let's figure out who's the guy who's potter. So let's try to figure it out. So let's say, Mishaseh potter, the inciter is potter, because after all, he is only a grumma, an indirect cause. He didn't take the dog by his hand and put it into the body of the woman. He says, go get her. So that's grumma. That's grumma. So he's potter, but if he's potter, then only one guy is potter. So who's chayiv? A chayiv bal hakela. The owner of the dog is chayiv. That's what it would seem to be pshat in the Mishnah. Let's take a look at the notes. Because the inciter has merely caused the damage, grumma, but has not inflicted directly. Now, though the Mishnah there is discussing primarily the inciter's liability to execution, where the incited animal kills the victim, because that's what happened over there, but we're still using this as a proof. The Gemara here understands that the Mishnah also means to discuss the inciter's liability where the animal simply injures the victim. Our point's been injuring. We're talking about the animal eats the thing and whatever. Right, but it would also include to injury. Now, why could we say both are potter? Look at 12. Right, the Mishnah meant that neither is liable. It should have said piturim. They are not liable, which it didn't say. So that's what Gemara says at this point. So the guy who incites the dog is potter. Now let's think for a minute. So what happened? Now the animal comes and takes a bite. Now when he takes a bite, if the mouth of the dog is considered what? The dog's property.
Oh, the dog's property, yeah.
Then it's going to say, what are you doing in my property? If you're going to say, kechatzer hamazik dami, if you're going to say that the mouth of the animal is treated like the damager's property, then why does the owner of the dog have to pay? Lay Malay, let him say, my boy Yotro Bepume de Kalbi, what's your hand doing in my dog's mouth? Right? In other words, it's a rhetorical question. In other words, you've trespassed, why should I pay? It's in my animal's property. So that seems to be a proof that what? Since you have to pay, that no, it's considered damagee's property. Must be a proof. Morris says, I can give you two answers to show you that it's not a proof. If I want, I can answer Ema, I could say, even though it's a little bit of a dochek, when it says potor, it's not just one guy, but both. Af meshase. It means even the insider is potor. In other words, I was said, but it should have said piturim. They'd say, no, it was obvious that the owner of the dog doesn't pay. That was obvious. We didn't need to tell you anything, because the owner of the dog wouldn't have bit the lady if he wasn't incited. There is no insight there. We didn't have to say potter. It was obvious that the owner of the dog is potter. The inside of the Mishnah is potter's referring to the insider, that since it's only a grum, he doesn't pay. Look at 14. The Tana might have considered obvious that the master is not liable, and therefore you don't want to state that the insider is not liable either. Okay, there was no question about the dog. So therefore we're saying that the owner of the dog is potter, and I'll tell you why he's potter. He's potter because the mouth of the dog is the owner of the dog's property. Or I'll give you another answer. The boy same, if you want, you can say.
So nobody's liable.
Right? The afke lenive visarte. Say the Mishnah speaking where the dog bit the lady, but the lady by its fangs that protruded out of her mouth.
Oh.
So the bite, that bite
it's
of the thing
of
was
property.
Outside of the property, and that's why he pays.
Whoa.
Thus, the victim's hand was not injured inside the premises of the dog's master. Okay? Very good. Okay, so we've rejected the first proof. Let's bring another proof. Toshima, come here, the following case. Heishich bo es hanochosh. A person now took a snake, and he took the snake in his hands, and the snake's mouth is open, and the fangs are out there, and takes with the fangs open, it's a poisonous snake, and right into somebody else's hand. Okay, and the person dies. Okay, now, what's the law? It's the machlokas. Machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev. Rabbi Yehuda says, you pay, you're a murderer, you're finished. And the rabbis say, no, you don't get the death penalty. So the question is, well, what's that depend on? So now we're going to explain, because there's a whole argument exactly, when does the poisonous venom be released from the snake? At what point is the poisonous venom does not start in the teeth of the snake. It's way down inside the snake. It's got to take time to
come out.
It's up to the teeth, right? So this is the explanation. The Amar Ravacha Bar Yaakov. Ravacha Bar Yaakov is going to explain the argument between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Keshetim Tzolomar, if you analyze this dispute, you will find out that this is what the root of the dispute is. The dear Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to say the following. That Eres Nachash, the poison of the snake, is already Bein Shina V'Omer. It already is already in the fangs. So therefore, when the guy takes the snake, the whole thing is ready to kill. It's immediate death. It's no different than taking a knife and stabbing him. The fangs of the snake doesn't kill the person. It's the fact that venom goes through.
Yeah.
So when the snake is ready to bite, the venom's already, it's already by the teeth. So it's like the murder weapon is totally there. Right? Rude apparently maintains that when a snake is aroused, the venom flows from its sac to its fangs even before the fangs enter the victim. So it's like he directly injured the guy. Lafikach, therefore, it's no different than, it's just like Makish Pesayev. It's like the stabber is liable by execution by the sword, because the guy who took the animal is like he took a weapon. Now there's another interesting, when an animal kills somebody, let's say an ox by itself just goes and gores somebody, we kill the animal.
Yeah.
Question is, do we kill the snake? So here we don't kill the snake, because the snake didn't eject any venom to kill the guy. The venom was already ejected. He says the stabber has not simply caused the victim's death, he has killed him directly by stabbing the venom-filled fangs into him. There's no different from a case in which a stabber would kill the victim by thrusting a knife at him. Therefore, the stabber is liable to death. But the snake is not executed, even though ordinarily an animal that kills with the death, since it has not done anything on its own. It was merely a passive tool in the hands of the stabber. Right? But that's all according to Rabbi Yehuda says, Yechayev. But according to the Chachamim, say, Yepater, why? The Chachamim, Eres Nachash Me'atzmamaiki. The snake itself takes the venom out. When he picks up the snake and it's inside, it's still the snake's in the snack. So now the man is only an indirect cause. Then when the snake bites, then the stuff, the snake itself makes the stuff come out of the sack.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be different. Even though the insider, the guy put it as potter, the snake will be killed. Umakish potter, the guy who put it there is potter. Why? The stabber is not liable to execution by the courts, since he has not dealt the death blow to the victim. He has simply caused the death by inserting the snake's fangs in the victim, because there's no poison yet. It is the snake that then deals the death blow to the victim by secreting its venom. Therefore, the snake is put to death, just like a bull that gores and kills a person. Now, question. When you give the guy the death penalty, right? The guy death penalty, why don't we say, what's the person's hand doing in the mouth of the snake?
Yeah.
If you're going to say that the property, that animal's mouth is like his property, so the guy said, what are you doing in my property?
Yeah, but we already said they were protruding out.
No, it's still in his mouth. Let's finalize the question. The Amriti part of the Chatzar HaMasik, you're going to say the mouth of a cow is like the damager's property. Let him say, my boyot, abubum dechivaya. What you can say the same thing. What is your hand doing in this mouth of my snake? And therefore, why do we pay? He has to pay at all. Okay? And that's where we're going to leave you for today. And then we're going to come to the answer, and we'll be able to easily get to the next Mishnah by tomorrow. Okay.
Gosh.
Go ahead.